My head snaps up suddenly. Was that a knock at the front door? Have they come for me? Every nerve is alive, every muscle taut. There is nothing but the rain, no bustling in the hallways to suggest someone rushing to answer a call. It is far too late for visitors, and surely Kartik would not use the front door. I am beginning to think that perhaps I dreamed it, when I hear the knock again, louder this time. Now there is movement below. Quickly, I put out my lantern. Bridget, our garrulous housekeeper, mutters as she thunders past on her way to answer the door. Who could be calling at so late an hour? My heart is keeping fast time with the rain as I creep down the hall and perch near the staircase. Bridget's candle streaks the wall with shadows as she takes the stairs nearly two at a time, her long braid flying wildly behind her.
By all the saints, Bridget mutters.
She huffs and puffs and reaches the door just as another knock descends. The door swings wide, letting the driving rain in with it. Someone has arrived in the dead of night. Someone dressed entirely in black. I feel as if I shall be sick with fright. I am frozen in place, not sure whether to make a dash down the stairs and out the door, or run back to my room and bolt the door. In the dark of the hall, I cannot make out a face. Bridget's candle moves closer, casting a glow on the figure. If this is a member of the Rakshana come for me, then I am most confused, for this is a woman. She gives her name, but as the door is still open, I cannot hear it over the howling of the rain and wind. Bridget nods and bids the coachman come in and leave the woman's trunk in the hallway. The woman pays him, and Bridget closes the door against the press of night.
"I'll just wake the parlourmaid to get you settled," Bridget grouses. "No sense waking Mrs. Nightwing. She'll see you in proper come morning."
"That will be satisfactory,"
the woman says. Her voice is deep, with a hint of a burr, an accent I cannot place. Bridget turns up the lights to a low glow. She can't resist giving one final harumph on her way to the maid's quarters. Left alone, the woman peels off her hat, revealing thick, dark hair and a severe face framed by heavy brows. She looks about the place, taking in the snake chandelier, the ornate carvings of nymphs and centaurs here and there. No doubt she has already noted the gargoyle collection dotting the roof and is likely wondering what sort of place this may be. She glances up the expanse of the staircase and stops, cocking her head. She squints as if she sees me. Quickly, I duck into the shadows, pushing myself flat against the wall. In a moment, I hear Bridget's sharp voice barking out orders to the sleepy parlourmaid.
"This is Miss McCleathy, our new teacher. See to her things. I'll show her to her room."
Mimi, the parlourmaid, yawns and reaches for the lightest of the luggage, but Miss McCleathy takes it from her.
"If you don't mind, I should like to take this. My personal effects."
She smiles without showing any teeth. "Yes, miss." Mimi curtsies in deference and, sighing, directs her attention to the large trunk in the foyer. Bridget's candle turns the staircase into a dance of shadow and light. I fly on tiptoe down the hall and take refuge behind a potted fern resting on a wooden stand, watching them from the cover of those mammoth leaves. Bridget leads the way, but Miss McCleathy stops at the landing. She gazes at everything as if she has seen it before. What happens next is most curious indeed. At the imposing double doors that lead to the fire-damaged east wing, the woman stops, flattening her palm against the warped wood there. In straining to see, my shoulder bumps the potted fern. The stand wobbles precariously. Quickly, I put out a hand to steady it, but already Miss McCleathy peers into the darkness.
"Who's there?"
she calls out. Heart pounding, I tighten myself into a ball, hoping the fern will disguise me. It won't do to be caught sneaking about the halls of Spence in the dead of night. I can hear the creaking of the floorboards signalling Miss McCleathy's approach. I'm done for. I shall lose all my good conduct marks and be forced to spend an eternity writing out Bible passages in penance.
"This way, Miss McCleathy, if you please,"
Bridget calls down.
"Yes, coming,"
Miss McCleathy answers. She leaves her perch by the doors and follows Bridget up and around the staircase till the hall is dark and silent once again, save for the rain. My sleep, when it comes, is fitful, poisoned by dreams. I see the realms, the beautiful green of the garden, the clear blue of the river. But that is not all I see. Flowers that weep black tears, three girls in white against the grey of the sea, a figure in a deep green cloak. Something's rising from the sea. I cannot see it. I can see only the faces of the girls, the cold, hard fear reflected in their eyes just before they scream. I wake for a moment, the room fighting to take shape, but the undertow of sleep is too powerful, and I find myself in one last dream. Pippa comes to me, wearing a garland of flowers on her head like a crown. Her hair is black and shining as always. Strands of it fly about her bare shoulders, so dark against the paleness of her skin. Behind her, the sky bleeds red into thick streaks of dark clouds, and a gnarled tree twists in on itself as if it's been burned alive, and this is all that remains of its once proud beauty. "Gemma," she says, and my name echoes in my head till I can hear nothing else. Her eyes. There's something wrong with her eyes. They're a bluish white, the colour of fresh milk, circled by a ring of black with one small dot of black in the centre. I want to look away, but I can't. "It's time to come back to the realms," she says, over and over, like the gentlest lullaby. "But careful, Gemma, my darling. They're coming for you. They're all coming for you." She opens her mouth with a terrible roar, exposing the sharp points of her hideous teeth.